Dennis Goodman, Reel 4. You participated in the Berlin Victory Parade. What date would that have been?
The 21st of July, 1945.
Ah. Could you tell me about your experience of it? Whereabouts was... Because Berlin was very destroyed, wasn't it? It was very devastated.
Yes, it was very bad. The Victory Parade took place on the huge... on the... it's not under the Linden, it's what is the Seeger's Allee, right? It was their own Victory Allee, you know, right? You know, so of course you remember only driving along and then, of course, right, being inspected, right, before the drive passed.
Who inspected you?
Huh?
Who would have inspected you?
Who would have inspected you? It was Churchill, the Prime Minister, level. Churchill was still Prime Minister. He was subsequently replaced by Adlai in the midst of the subsequent Potsdam Conference.
Would it have just been a victory parade of British, or were the other Allies in it? Were the Americans and Russians?
No, this was really a British parade. It was the British Victory Parade.
Was it a very big affair?
But Russians and Americans and French participated in it, but I don't remember, I don't think they participated in the march past. So only a very small contingent, possibly. Mm. This was really a British parade.
What sort of state was Berlin in?
We only came to Berlin after, I think, a week or two. The Russians, Russians had liberated Berlin, it's the right word, and we came into Berlin, only Americans came in, only a week after the end of the war.
What sort of state was it in, the city?
Oh, dreadful state. It had been bombed, of course, very heavily. Only when we were billeted in the Olympic Stadium, that had not been bombed. So, right, but the center of the city, of course, had been terribly damaged.
How about the area around Hitler's bunker? Were you able to see that area?
I was in Hitler's bunker. I was actually in Hitler's bunker. But, right, and I was very tempted, I would have liked to take this enormous painting, which the Russians still had left then, which I remember very well, and it was, of course, above in the Chancellery building, above the bunker, since it was not in the bunker, and I was so tempted, but it was too big anyway.
Yes, what was the bunker like? How extensive was it, the Hitler's bunker?
Well, much of that had been destroyed. So it's, I have a photograph of the Chancellery building, and the Chancellery building was not that terribly destroyed, right? But you could see there was bomb damage. I mean, I photographed it.
You seem to have done very well with your photographs.
Not only the last bit.
So where did you get your camera?
I can't even remember that. It must have been from a German army officer. It must have been I think 2 months before the end of the war.
How about the German civilians in Berlin? Were you, did you...
We were not officially allowed to fraternize at all.
But did you keep to that, or did you speak to them?
Yes, we spoke to people, but more on the line of duty, and I spoke. After the Victory Parade, I was posted to the Potsdam Conference on guard duty. In fact, I was guarding Churchill and then Attlee at the in the council of the British delegation headquarters. At the Potsdam Conference, I was supposed to be unarmed, but I had a pistol in my pocket. Well, because it was supposed to be an arm, because inside the delegation area, the commissions came, right, and said they felt that they should, well, the guards should not look, right, you know, should look more at leisure, more relaxed, right, but in fact, right, we were armed.
That was a very big and important conference, wasn't it, Potsdam? Yes. Do you remember the changeover from Churchill to Attlee? Was that surprising when Winston Churchill didn't come back to the conference?
Oh, I think it was very surprising. It was very, very surprising, of course. I didn't expect it. I still have got a photograph of the newspaper, of the newspaper announcing that Churchill had lost. We thought it was most ungrateful, you know, at that time, because but there was a strong, okay, I think the election was too early after the war. Immediately after the war, I think more time should have passed. I don't remember. It's so well. Of course, everyone was looking forward to the most drastic social changes, you know, right? And the war had been won, one was going to go back into a country full of opportunity and hope and glory, you know, this kind of thing. And of course, it was not that. Sentiment is different.
I suspect you saw Stalin, did you?
Yes, yeah, Stalin.
Yes, what did you think of Stalin when you saw him?
I didn't have any close contact, you know. I saw him, but it's not, you know.
Yes, what did he look like then? Did he look, you know, how did he look? He looked like his pictures.
Yeah, I think he had then a less imposing stature than it appeared, you know. On photographs, he was really quite a small man, you know, and, right? But, you know, unless you have really close proximity to someone, it's late.
What was the opinion of the Russians then, though? You know, you had been in Berlin,
yes,
and the Russians had taken Berlin. You must have... I know you met Russians.
I have a lot of contact with Russians.
Yes, what did you... what was your opinion of the Red Army?
Well, I was very, you know, I was dreadfully sorry for the Russians at the time, right? Because they had some of their troops were really on their last legs, you know, because, right, they lost during that war 20 million people, right? And the casualty rates was, right, it was enormous, right? Their equipment had suffered. Russians were very good on the design, right? I mean, their work, their fighting vehicles, right? Their tanks, right? Were well designed, well armored, right? But deplorable in workmanship and inside and fitting out, right? And many of the Russian units had to find food as they went along. Right? They didn't have that well organized food supply. You saw little young, very young soldiers, almost the watch was a novelty to them, you know, right?
How about their behaviour to the German citizens, the civilians? Did you gain any impression of that?
Well, you know, the Russians with whom I met at the time, right, were probably education-wise, right, you know, to whom I talked, because they were the ones who spoke language, they were in intelligence activities and so forth, right, they were much more civilized. You hear stories about troops and drunken orgies and rape and all this, right? Sometimes these things are quite exaggerated, but you know they suffered so much, right? But actually, I never witnessed any incident, in Berlin, our troops got on well with it. It's only then weeks after the war when, you know, when the climate started to change. On a political level, but before that, when we first got into Berlin, and the first thing I remember of the Russians, you know, was a celebration. There were six of us, tank unit, and six Russians, the Russian unit, we were toasting one another in buckets of vodka. It was the only time in my life that I really was absolutely knocked out, you know. Right? But we had our own against Russians. But, you know, I mean, but there was euphoria, of the war having won. And it was even greater relief for the Russians and for us, because the Russians suffered unbelievably.
Had you heard this time about the camps, the concentration camps, and the death camps?
Oh yes, in Berlin, by the time of Berlin, yes. Right? By the time before that, it was rumors, and people didn't want to believe it, you know. But Belsenbaden had been liberated, and so it was then already known. And of course, you heard from the Russians also, you know, of their experiences, because the experiences in the East were quite different from those in the West.
At this stage, had you heard about your parents? What had happened to your parents?
No, that I only found out when I got to Amsterdam. It was all by Berlin, but by Berlin I knew. Yes, by Berlin I knew. By the 27th of July, because in between, I was in the Netherlands. Yes, I knew that. So just getting on the dates, you know, I was given compassionate leave to go to Amsterdam when the war was over. There I found out what had happened to my parents. The final confirmation took a little longer, you know, but it was very clear what had happened. I had a grandmother in the Netherlands also, and she had gone underground. She was hidden by the resistance movement, and so I found her.
Can you remember what you were actually doing the day war ended?
The day war ended.
VE Day.
VE Day.
I wonder if you had any particular memory of the sort of celebration of the actual end of war.
Not that much, because the celebration was probably the stronger in London than it was, you know, because we had been fighting and the war had really been, you know, over. I can tell you that. It didn't impress itself so much on me. I have more vivid memories of quite different things, of interrogating German officers, of surrendering of their units and that kind of thing, than an actual celebration.
Mm-hmm. What was the attitude of these surrendering officers, did you find?
Oh, some of them were very arrogant, extremely arrogant. I had some experiences of arrogance because an officer this very distinctly here, that he's unity to put on the arms, etc., and says he wouldn't deal with me, only would deal with a senior officer. To that point, actually, I'd been speaking in English, and then I started to speak in German. I was furious, you see, and this settled the question about her. I'm very, very arrogant.
Were you involved in any way with Germany after the war because of your fluency in the language?
Of course, the moment the war was over, after the Potsdam Parade, and guard duties at the Potsdam Conference, I didn't want to avoid the main, in the Eighth Hussars, on ordinary duties, because I think I didn't want just to polish class. It was a very traditional regiment, so with great discipline. I didn't take to polishing boots, So I thought my knowledge of language should be made use of. So I was then posted to Brussels to what was not an interpreter's training school. And from there, and there I was issued with a motorcycle, and which I kept at the end of my service, and I reported back to Hamburg, to what was known STSIB 8 Corps, which was an intelligence unit, and this intelligence unit was then that. I had a section which was transferred to Neuengamme. Neuengamme had been a German concentration camp, where the Danish police force, OMAS, had been interned. There was sometime when arrested, I can't remember the dates anymore, the entire Danish police force, but by the time, of course, we got there, they had been released, and we used the camp facilities to intern all those who belonged to Nazi organizations, obviously people who served back in those Nazi organizations, to the who were members of, say, the German intelligence services, and anyone who had been classified then as data security, or who could have been or suspected of war crimes. So I spent from 45 until the end of 46, interrogating partly for war crimes and partly security matters. I have many moments and many interesting experiences.
Perhaps you could tell me one. One of these interrogations.
Yes, there was, for instance, a German general called von Albersleben, who was suspected of participating, being instrumental in war crimes in Eastern Europe. This general, I was convinced that he would try to escape and that he would be held from outside. Interrogation reports. I stated at the bottom that he should be kept in a high security compound, because of the risk of escape. Yeah. They had a high security compound for people with very high ranks or those who might be who were we considered the danger to security, right? And who might escape. Right? And I was told when I had classified him as such, right, that I was too strict, right? You know, that I was always too suspicious, right? You know, I had such an argument with my commander. So I went on leave to England, came back, and reported at our headquarters, which was on the, I don't know whether you know Hamburg, on the Alster, the beautiful spot, you know, to our headquarters, and my commanding officer, Colonel Lambsdorff at the time, called me in, and said, von Albers, and said, agreed with me, Mark, von Albers, we escaped. I went back to our state camp and found out that he had gotten out in an ambulance. And he was sick, apparently, and he was taken out of an ambulance and disappeared. I suspected at the time he had been gotten out through the organization which was taking German Nazis to South America. And I wanted to pursue certain traces, but I was stopped from being defundering this. Some years later, after the war, must have been in 1949, I spent some time in Argentina, training in the field in which I I had a dentist in Buenos Aires, whose nurse I fell in love. But who also had a very interesting story. This dentist was a dentist to the Argentinian army and worked at the University Hospital, where a lot of Germans, ex-German officers who were acting as advisors to Argentina's army and lift up country, were also being treated. I asked him, my dentist, could he find out whether General von Albers name was in Argentina? And some time later, he came back to me and said, yes, he is here. And in fact, 10 years ago, I read in the newspapers that he had died in Argentina. And there is still a footnote to that story, because that dentist, who had become a very good friend of mine, some years after I had left Argentina, was murdered and was poisoned. I always maintained that he was murdered by the Germans. Well, at first they reported it accidentally poisoned. I never believed it. And I always thought that he was he was murdered by that Nazi underground which existed in Argentina. You know, a lot of people had been stolen in the way to Argentina. Perón was very friendly, but very receptive to it. Just as many of the got to work in the
It's when you look back, you know, to the role you had in German Germany, you know, your interpreter job at that camp, do you think things were too lax with these senior Nazis, that, you know, a lot did get away?
People got taken to prominent positions. Not immediately, this was in later years.
Did you get any impression that that might have been deliberate policy of the British administration, that they were rather softer on Nazis?
Yeah, I think there was a lack of understanding. Well, it's I read the other day, right, in the Times, when there was comments, right, on the commemoration of this year, right, the president of the Burma Star Association, in referring to the Tower of Hokkaido, which was in Japanese camps, right? The talks, not the civilians. The civilians didn't really suffer that much, right? In the internment camps. But to the treatment of talks, which was ghastly, in a choir, etc. Then he said, well, one can never forgive the Japanese, but of course one can forgive the Germans for what they did. I think because we showed a complete lack of understanding and cultural understanding, and symbolically the German president and Chancellor is not being invited to the VE celebration, one will not invite the Japanese. And I think this is completely controversial. Should be reconciliation, they were to invite them. No objection to it at all. I think the invitation should be equally extended to the Japanese.
Well, when you look back on your experience, you know, particularly of internment, do you feel any resentment to the British government for what happened to you in 1940? Being sent to Australia, the Dun era?
It was an awful waste of time. It was an awful waste of money from tax point, from the tax point. It was a kind of measure at that time, which had not been fought over. But I suspect at the time that there were certain elements in the Home Office, which had a strong influence on the cabinet, and they had put other motivations involved, and this is why I'm so interested in seeing the minutes.
These people you interrogated, you know, when you were working in the interpreter's field.
Yes.
What sort of people were they? What sort of Germans?
You had interrogated war crimes, for war crimes. The most terrifying experience to me was the absolute ordinariness of the people who committed those crimes. You know, it could be you and I or anyone sitting across one, right? It was always said that they had no alternative for to do. They followed orders, it is incredible. I mean, this to me, if I go back, so my memories of the terrible things which I learned, which had been done, is that they were mostly committed by people, you know, who are just very ordinary men in the street. In appearance.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Mr. Goodman, for telling me about your internment experience and very much more. Thank you.